From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
My decision to speak out in June of 2005 to leave the Army so that I could speak out was the toughest thing I've ever done in my life. But you know what? I haven't looked back, and I can look at myself in the mirror in the morning knowing that I've done the right thing. Somebody had to speak out. If not me, who?
Major General John Batiste. He was offered a promotion to become a three-star general, the second highest-ranking military officer in Iraq. Instead, he quit over the war.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps.
That was an excerpt of an ad General Batiste did for VoteVets.org. As a result, CBS News fired him as a paid news consultant. Today, we spend the hour with General John Batiste. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Congress has approved nearly $100 billion in war spending through September without a timeline for withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. Thursday's vote capped months of wrangling that saw President Bush veto an earlier bill setting a non-binding timetable for withdrawal. In the House, the final vote was 280 to 142. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was among Democrats voting against the measure.
We have lost thousands of Americans. The number is hard to measure, but everyone agrees easily. Over 100,000 Iraqis. The cost to our reputation and our military readiness is incalculable, but it is huge. We think there should be a new direction. We think what we should be talking about here today is a different vision for stability in the Middle East and how our role in Iraq contributes to that.
Across the aisle, Republican Minority Leader John Boehner broke down as he called on lawmakers to fund the war.
I came here to do something. And I think at the top of our list is providing for the safety and security of the American people. That's at the top of our list. And after 3,000 of our fellow citizens died at the hands of these terrorists, when are we going to stand up and take them on? When are we going to defeat them? Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, if we don't do it now, and then we don't have the courage to defeat this enemy, we will long, long regret it.
The final Senate vote was 80 to 14. Democratic presidential candidates Hillary Rodham Clinton and Barack Obama both voted against the bill. The measure also includes several domestic provisions sought by Democrats. The minimum wage was increased for the first time in a decade, rising from $5.15 to $7.25 over a two-year period. Earlier at the White House, President Bush urged lawmakers to approve the money to continue the war. He was later questioned by NBC reporter David Gregory.
Can you explain why you believe you're still a credible messenger on the war?
I'm credible because I read the intelligence, David. And make it abundantly clear in plain terms that if we let up, we'll be attacked.
The president also said the U.S. would push for new sanctions on Iran over its nuclear activities. The call came as the U.S. denied claims a massive display of aircraft in the Gulf Coast is meant to intimidate Iran. The ships are set to conduct a series of drills over the next 2 weeks. This is Defense Secretary Robert Gates.
It's not intended as a show of force. It patently is a show of force just because that's a lot of ships and clearly a lot of military power. But the intent is pure and simple, an exercise where we saw the opportunity to take advantage of a confluence of schedules for these three ships.
In Iraq, more than 60 people were killed in a series of attacks Thursday. At least 27 died in a suicide bombing on a funeral procession in the city of Fallujah. Meanwhile, the U.S. military announced the deaths of six more U.S. troops. Around 90 U.S. soldiers have been killed in Iraq this month. Last month was the military's deadliest this year, with 104 killed. Meanwhile, in Baghdad, hundreds of residents took to the streets of the Amal district to protest a series of U.S.-led raids and a spike in bombing attacks. This is demonstrator Saeed Nefa al-Bakati.
We are here to protest against the daily raids in the Amal district, Beya, and all areas of Al-Karh by U.S. troops, and against the mortar attacks against all areas of Al-Karh. We called on substituting the Peshmerga forces with other army commando forces because they will do their job better. There are no means of communication.
In other Iraq news, the Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has made a public appearance for the first time in 4 months. Sadr went into hiding in Iran at the start of the U.S.-led crackdown on Baghdad. Earlier today, he delivered a sermon before thousands of worshippers in the holy city of Najaf and called for withdrawal of U.S. troops.
No forces, because they will do their job.
In the occupied territories, Israel has carried out an airstrike near the Gaza home of the Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh. Residents say a missile hit a caravan guarding a nearby street. Israel says Haniyeh was not the target of the attack. The strike was one of 11 to hit Gaza over a 24-hour period, the most intense barrage since Israel began attacking last week. The strikes followed Israel's arrest of more than 30 officials in the Hamas government. This is Palestinian Information Minister Mustafa Barghouti.
The arrest of the minister in President Abbas' government, Dr. Nasser al-Din al-Sha'ir, the Minister of Education, and the destruction of an unlimited number of civil society and charitable institutions. All of this, we consider as a government, represents an attack, an assault on the president, his government, and the institutions of the elected institutions of the Palestinian people.
The arrests have also drawn international criticism. This is UN Middle East envoy Michael Williams.
What worries me is that in most cases, as I understand it, there haven't been any charges or let alone trials. So that is something that disturbs me and is something that I want to look at in the coming days and weeks.
Back on Capitol Hill, Democrats have introduced a measure calling for a no-confidence vote on Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. The vote is scheduled for mid-June. In media news, staffers at McClatchy newspapers say the Pentagon has effectively frozen them out over their pre-war coverage questioning the Bush administration's claims on Iraq. McClatchy's Pentagon correspondents have not been allowed to travel on the defense secretary's plane for at least 3 years. Washington, D.C. bureau chief John Walcott said, quote, "The idea of public officials barring coverage by people they've decided they don't like is at best unprofessional, at worst undemocratic and petty." In Mexico, the Los Angeles Times is reporting the Mexican government has expanded its surveillance of telephone calls and emails using money from the U.S. government. The State Department has paid for a new $3 million surveillance system designed by the New York-based company Verint Systems. The funding has raised concerns the monitoring could be shared with U.S. law enforcement. Both U.S. and Mexican officials declined comment on whether intelligence sharing could take place. And finally, natives of the Chagos Islands in the Indian Ocean have won a new legal victory in their long-term battle to return home. British forces expelled the islanders 40 years ago to make way for a U.S. military base at the archipelago's largest island, Diego Garcia. The base has been used to launch bombing missions on Iraq and Afghanistan, but this week a British court criticized the British government's, quote, abuse of power and ruled Chagos inhabitants should be allowed to return to every island except Diego Garcia. The U.S. has long campaigned to deny inhabitants the right to return to any of the 65 islands. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. CBS News is being accused of political censorship after it fired a retired U.S. general from his position as a paid news consultant after he criticized President Bush's Iraq war policy. The controversy began when the general, John Batiste, appeared in a television commercial sponsored by the group VoteVets.org.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women. Senator McCain, protect America, not George Bush.
2 days after the ad aired, CBS News fired Batiste. In response, the group MoveOn.org collected 230,000 signatures and a petition demanding Batiste be rehired by CBS. For Batiste, this marks the second time in a year he's made headlines for criticizing the Bush administration's handling of the Iraq War. Last year, he shocked many in the Pentagon when he publicly called for Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to resign. Six other retired generals also called for Rumsfeld to quit, but Batiste was the only one of the group to have served in a high position in the Pentagon and had commanded troops in Iraq. Prior to the war, he was then Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz's senior military assistant. In 2004 and 2005, Major General John Batiste served as commander of the 1st Infantry Division in Iraq. He led 22,000 troops fighting in the Sunni Triangle. Batiste was offered a promotion to become a 3-star general and the second highest-ranking military officer in Iraq. Instead, he resigned after a 31-year career in the Army. Months later, he began speaking out. On Thursday, I interviewed General Batiste for an hour in Rochester, New York, where he now runs a steel company. I began by asking him about CBS's decision.
CBS and I left on very friendly terms, quite frankly. It's not about money. It's about being able to speak out. For example, here we are, you and I, untethered, so I can speak my mind.
But CBS is a news network. Why shouldn't you, as a general, a retired general, be able to talk about your attitude toward the Iraq War right now?
Again, I'm pleased that you and I can be having this conversation right now, that I can speak out, say what's on my mind, without any limitations.
You were a paid consultant for them, but will they invite you on simply as a pundit, as a general, who would comment on what is happening today?
I was a part-time consultant. I had been signed on for a few months. I think I had one or two opportunities to talk with them. If they invite me back to comment, I'd think about it. I'm not interested in going back in any capacity as a paid or part-time paid consultant.
What do you think of the fact, well, for example, Talking Points memo documented how CBS News has allowed the Brookings Institution pundit Michael O'Hanlon to continue to appear as a CBS News consultant, even though he's repeatedly advocated for the surge?
You know, that's something you'll have to ask CBS. I'm focused on other things more important.
Well, let's talk about what you are focused on and your decision to leave the military. First, give us a little of your background, serving in the Gulf, then serving here as a general in the current war, and how your decision-making or how your decision to be a part of this changed.
Sure. 31-year Army veteran, 2-time combat veteran, 1st Gulf War, Operation Iraqi Freedom, multiple tours of duty in the Balkans, serving in Bosnia, Kosovo, commanding Army formations from platoon through division, commanded the 1st Infantry Division most recently for 3 years, an incredible career, but gut-wrenching decision in the summer of 2005 to put my uniform up and leave an institution I loved because I realized I could do more good for my soldiers wearing the suit that I am today than the fatigues that I wore some time ago.
Can you talk specifically about that decision, and especially for young people, to see how you, with your history in the military, your history going back to your father and your grandfather, what those days were like? Where were you when you made this decision?
Tough decision. As you said, both grandfathers served. My father served multiple times, career infantry officer, myself a West Point graduate, 31 years in the military. Decision was made in my quarters in Germany in the summer of 2005. You see,
we got this war terribly wrong. I'm not anti-war at all. I don't support MoveOn.org. It's a reason I joined Vote Vets. This is all about getting it right. This is all about recognizing that it's not about timelines and deadlines. It's more about recognizing that this administration got the national strategy so wrong in Iraq, wrong in March 2003, wrong today in May 2007. This administration failed to mobilize this country in any way, shape, or form to complete the important task of defeating worldwide Islamic extremism, global terrorism.
Do you think, General Batiste, that it was wrong for the United States to invade Iraq March 19th, 2003?
You know, that's all hindsight, and we certainly could debate that forever. The point is, we are where we are. And again, the strategy is so incredibly flawed from a national perspective, an interagency process that is all but dysfunctional. The many facets of mobilizing a nation to accomplish something as important as war. You know, you exhaust all political, diplomatic, and economic means before you commit your military into this kind of endeavor. Today, our Army and Marine Corps, and portions of the Navy and Air Force, by the way, because they're competing for the same shortage of funds, are in serious shape. And this should not sit well with any American based on the current situation and the other threats in the world today. We've got the best military this nation has ever fielded. We're on the verge in a few days of celebrating Memorial Day. This is a day to stop what we're doing and pay our respects to our fallen comrades, Americans who have given their last full measure. It's not a day to debate timelines. It's not a day to debate whether or not we should be in Iraq. It's not a day for Republicans to be fighting Democrats. It's a day for all of us to say, stop, let's pay our respects to our fallen comrades.
General Batiste, I want to ask you about your criticism of the previous Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld. Last year, you joined other generals in publicly calling for his resignation. This is what you said last September.
Donald Rumsfeld is not a competent wartime leader. He knows everything except how to win. He surrounds himself with like-minded and compliant subordinates who do not grasp the importance of the principles of war, the complexities of Iraq, or the human dimension of warfare. Secretary Rumsfeld ignored 12 years of U.S. Central Command deliberate planning and strategy, dismissed honest dissent, and browbeat subordinates to build his plan, which did not address the hard work to crush the insurgency, secure a post-Saddam Iraq, build the peace, and set Iraq up for self-reliance. He refused to acknowledge and even ignored the potential for the insurgency, which was an absolute certainty. Bottom line, his plan allowed the insurgency to take root and metastasize to where it is today.
General Batiste, testifying in Congress, I wanted to read from the Wall Street Journal a recent piece they did on you, the two-star rebel for General Batiste, a tour in Iraq turned a loyal soldier into Rumsfeld's most unexpected critic. And it says, 6 days after he called for Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to leave his post, retired Major General John Batiste faced a crushing moment of doubt. Earlier that morning, Mr. Rumsfeld had brushed off General Batiste and other critics as inflexible bureaucrats uncomfortable with change. A few hours later, President Bush vowed to stand by his secretary. Now CNN's Paula Zahn was grilling General Batiste, saying, so do you plan to continue with these kinds of attacks when the president has made it clear that he's not budging? General Batiste said, I have yet to determine if I will do that or not. Afterward, the 53-year-old officer retreated to a deserted parking garage outside the television station. For 30 minutes, he paced up and down, he says, literally shaking. Why were you shaking? And go through that thought process with us.
I remember it well. And by the way, everything that you just played on the recording, I'd say again. For a moment, I had doubts. Remember where I came from. West Point graduate, 31 years in the Army. We take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and to obey the orders of the President and the officers appointed over us when we're commissioned. That's the reason I chose to get out of the Army before I started to speak out. But any moment of doubt was quickly eclipsed with absolute certainty that I knew what I was doing. It was the right thing to do, and it is important to keep speaking out for our country, for our incredible military, and their families who are bearing the brunt of this war. The military is the only element of our national strategy that this administration is focused on. It seems to me they've all but forgotten about the diplomatic, political, and economic hard work that needs to be done before the military is even committed and concurrently to accomplish what needs to be done. It's absolutely outrageous.
Major General John Batiste, speaking from Rochester, New York, where he now lives and runs a steel company. When we come back, I talk to him about officers who refuse to fight, like Aaron Watada. I ask him about the private mercenary firms like Blackwater, and he talks more about his life and his decision. Stay with us.
Miles to Baghdad. What have I become? New York's got snow in April, and I can't locate the sun. Tie a yellow ribbon around something.
Miles to Baghdad, Lizzie West and the White Buffalo here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we return now to our interview with retired Major General John Batiste, I asked him about what should be done now in Iraq.
First off, we need a comprehensive national strategy with an interagency process that is well-led, focused, and synchronized to accomplish what we're trying to achieve. Diplomatically, we need to be making up lost ground, speaking with friends, allies, and enemies to galvanize support to accomplish what we're trying to do. Politically, there's a whole range of issues that need to be considered and addressed. We owe it to the Iraqi people. Economically, we've never gotten off dime one to change the attitudes of the Iraqi people to improve their quality of life and give them alternatives to the insurgency. Mobilizing the country is fundamentally important to accomplish what we're doing. We haven't done any of that. From properly resourcing the military to the Veterans Administration to figuring out ways to fund a war that's costing over $10 billion a month, we're mortgaging our futures. The people that I speak to in America want to get involved beyond sending a care package and putting a magnet on the back of their car. We're screaming out to our leaders to lead the way, and nothing is being said. If we can't figure this out, if there's not a comprehensive national strategy, and we haven't seen one yet, and if we don't get this nation mobilized, then we need to take stock in where we are. Our Army and Marine Corps are at a very serious point. They're doing a great job. General Petraeus, his officers and men are doing unbelievable work in Iraq. We owe them all a great debt of gratitude. But the fact is, without a national strategy that makes sense, and without mobilizing the country, we got to think about America first.
Can you talk about General Harold Johnson?
Harold K. Johnson, in Vietnam. You know, one of the points that made a big difference to me in my decision process to speak out is the story of General Harold K. Johnson, who was Chief of Staff of the Army during the Vietnam years. This case was studied by myself and other officers at the Army War College, and previous to that at the Command and General Staff College. It goes something like this. As the Chief of Staff of the Army, General Johnson realized that everything was going wrong in Vietnam. The story goes that his purpose was to jump in his sedan and go to the White House to confront President Johnson, President Lyndon Johnson, to say something like that, we have completely screwed up the war in Vietnam. You haven't mobilized the nation. You violated principles of war, and on and on. And I therefore resign, and I'm going to go out and tell the press waiting for me out in the parking lot exactly why I'm doing this. He, like so many of us, make the decision not to do that, to stay within the institution, to fix things from within. They can do more good serving than outside. On his deathbed, he was asked by a very close friend, do you have any regrets? And his answer was, I have but one, that I lacked the moral courage that day in the president's office to do what I should have done. I've paraphrased that a bit, but essentially, you get the notion.
Is that what went into your thinking as you gave up? I mean, you were going to be promoted to a three-star general.
Absolutely. Those and other factors, my experiences in the Pentagon from March 2001 till June of 2002, my experiences within the 1st Infantry Division, service in Kosovo, service in Turkey, service in Iraq in a three-year period, I realized that change doesn't come from within. There comes a time when you got to look at yourself in the mirror and do the right thing. I chose to hang up my uniform, leave an institution and a way of life that I loved. But I realized, as I said before, that I could do more for my soldiers wearing this suit and tie than I could wearing the battle dress uniform of the United States Army.
What has been the response of fellow generals?
Extremely supportive. Not long ago, 10 days ago, there was a story about me in the New York Times. Good story, and in that I said that, you know, I rarely get any feedback from active duty or retired officers to say, don't say what you're saying. In fact, since the airing or the printing of that story 10 days ago, there has been two cases where folks have gotten back to me, and I respect their opinion, and I appreciate their feedback. But the vast majority of the feedback and the response from active duty, retired, serving folks, comrades, is keep saying what you're saying.
General Battiste, last September you co-signed a letter urging Congress to reject a provision of the Military Commissions Act that would redefine Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. Can you talk about the Military Commissions Act, Abu Ghraib, and Guantanamo?
Sure. In December of 2003, January 2004, the 1st Infantry Division was in Kuwait preparing for combat, preparing to move into Iraq as part of Operation Iraqi Freedom. I remember the day that the division staff came to me, and the subject of the decision briefing was how the 1st Infantry Division would run its five prisons and detention centers within our area of operations in Iraq. We started out with the rules that the Department of Defense had promulgated that watered down the provisions of the Geneva Convention, giving American soldiers what I consider to be incredible and unacceptable latitude in the dealing with prisoners. We collectively at that meeting decided to do away with all of these rules and ground everything we would do on the Geneva Conventions. That is, you treat prisoners right. We found that the information that we garnered from our prisoners was much better when we didn't use torture.
General Battiste, Haditha, More details have emerged on the U.S. massacre of 24 Iraqi civilians in the town of Haditha in November 2005. Your response?
I think Haditha is a sad chapter in the story of our military. It did not reflect the vast majority of our great soldiers and Marines, which is not to say that a very small percentage make mistakes. On a different level, I think Haditha represents the incredible frustration and friction that's in the military today, under-strength, under-resourced, in Iraq trying to accomplish a task that required over three times the number of coalition troops without the right capability. So you see the frustration building in our great soldiers and Marines. Unacceptable behavior, there's no excuse for it.
Recently, Sergeant Sanik Dela Cruz testified he urinated on the dead body of an Iraqi killed by his fellow Marines. Sergeant Cruz also said he saw his squad leader shoot down five Iraqi civilians who were trying to surrender. The testimony came in a pretrial hearing for a Marine charged for the massacre and the ensuing cover-up.
There is a fine line between an armed mob and a disciplined military force. And it's up to military leaders to hold that line with rigid discipline. What you just relayed are examples where we lose it. There is no reason in the world why that kind of behavior should be condoned or, for that matter, happen in combat.
How did it happen? And how this is one example that we know about because there was film, although it was raised for months before it was when Time magazine brought the film to the military that it could no longer be denied.
It happened because of a couple of things. One is a failure in leadership. Two, mitigating, but does not excuse it, is the fact that we have a great Army and Marine Corps committed into something in Iraq. They're bearing the burden almost entirely. The rest of the elements of national strategy, like diplomatic, political, and economic measures, all but non-existent. A force that is under-resourced with boots on the ground by a huge number, factors three times. What we're seeing there is frustration. Again, there's no excuse for it. I don't condone it. It's wrong. It's a failure in leadership.
General Batista, a recent Army survey has found more than one-third of U.S. soldiers in Iraq said they believe torture should be allowed in some cases. In addition, about two-thirds of Marines and half the Army troops surveyed said they would not report a team member for mistreating a civilian or for destroying civilian property unnecessarily. The Army survey found that less than half of the soldiers polled believe that non-combatants should be treated with dignity and respect, and 10% of the troops said they'd personally mistreated civilians in Iraq. Nearly 1,800 troops took part in the survey. Acting Army Surgeon Major General Gail Pollack characterized the report as positive news, telling reporters what it speaks to is the leadership that the military is providing because they're not acting on those thoughts. They're not torturing the people.
None of us should be proud of those numbers. I think it speaks to the legacy of the Office of the Secretary of Defense back in the spring of 2003, where the military of this incredible nation of ours was committed into something with a flawed strategy, a war plan that was outrageous, violated principles of war, and the principles of the Geneva Convention watered down to the point where we got to the terrible situation of Abu Ghraib, and by the way, many other instances of a similar nature. This is not good. This is a failure in leadership from the very top of this administration that generates that kind of response in our military.
Guantanamo, General Batiste. Just that one word, your response to the, I guess it's been more now than 700 men who have been held there, many for years, for up to 5 years without charge.
Outrageous. Where's the American principles?
What discussion was happening among the generals, your fellow generals, as this has been going on for years now?
I can only relate what I know, and that's within the 1st Infantry Division in north central Iraq. We chose to ground our operations on the Geneva Conventions. There can be no watering down of that document. I don't want my soldiers treated like that should they be captured.
Do you think Guantanamo should be shut down?
Absolutely. There's such a thing called due process.
What do you think of the military contractors, what some call mercenaries? I mean, companies like Blackwater, made up of tens of thousands of soldiers. What do you think of what they're doing in Iraq? The Special Inspector General on Iraq Reconstruction has just announced that they will begin an audit of companies like Blackwater.
Well, I think they should. There's a real problem in Iraq. There's a huge number of these contractors, and it creates, in effect, two chains of command, which violates one of our principles of war, which is unity of effort and unity of command. Creates enormous confusion on the battlefield, and as a result, we haven't done as well as we should have in Iraq. The problem is we went to war with a military that was sadly under strength, under-resourced. And it's a problem today that this country has got to address.
Do you think that Blackwater mercenaries, soldiers, police should be under the uniform code of military justice?
I haven't thought much about that, but what I do think is there needs to be unity of command in a theater of operations. In other words, one person in charge of all Americans, no matter what uniform they're wearing, inside that theater. We don't have that in Iraq, and it creates incredible frustration. I know as a division commander, it drove me crazy, as it did the other division commanders, that we never had unity of effort, a fundamental principle of war that we dare not violate.
What about the pretext for war, weapons of mass destruction, that has turned out not to be true? You're a general who led troops into war on those grounds. What are your feelings about that today?
I certainly knew before deploying to Iraq that there was no connection between 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. And I had my doubts about the weapons of mass destruction. In the course of the 12 months in Iraq, we confirmed, at least in our area of north central Iraq, that other than 1980 vintage chemical munitions that we found in stockpiles rusting in a state of dilapidation, there was nothing. So you can imagine my feelings about that.
Does that mean you feel it is wrong that the U.S. invaded Iraq to begin with?
Again, that's a debate we could have all day. It really doesn't matter. We are where we are.
What about General Shinseki, someone you were close to being driven out? What are your thoughts about that today?
I have enormous respect for General Shinseki, an incredibly talented and competent chief of staff of the Army. You recall in the Senate Armed Services Committee in 2003, when asked what it would take to be successful in Iraq, he gave an answer. That was based on the war plan developed by U.S. Central Command.
Major General John Batiste, talking to him in Rochester, New York. We'll come back to the conclusion of our interview after this break.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA. We'll be right back. crack in the wall on a visionary flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all.
Democracy by Leonard Cohen here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we return to our interview with retired Major General John Batiste, I asked him about the popular TV show 24 on Fox. This past fall, the Dean of West Point, Brigadier General Patrick Finnegan, along with experienced military and FBI interrogators and representatives of Human Rights First, flew to Southern California to meet with the creative team behind 24 and tell them to stop using torture on the program because American soldiers were copying the show's tactics. I asked for Major General Batiste's response.
Well, it goes back to my previous comments that there is no room for the use of torture in how we treat our detainees and our prisoners. We violate the principles of the Geneva Convention at our own peril, which is exactly what we did, driven by the Office of the Secretary of Defense in late 2002-2003, which allowed all this to happen. It's a culture that we got to get beyond. You know, all of us watch 24, but in the American military, it's fundamentally important that we embrace the Geneva Conventions, never step away from them, stay on the moral high ground. We're the United States of America.
You're a lifelong Republican?
I am.
The New York Times is reporting you're now a consultant for Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Oh, that is not true. I will answer any candidates' questions, whether that be Senator Clinton or Senator Obama or Rudy Giuliani. If somebody calls me and wants my opinion, I'd be happy to give it to them. It's important that we educate our candidates.
How do you feel about Senator McCain?
You know, I'd rather not comment on the politics of this right now.
What is your understanding of where President Bush is coming from right now?
Good question. I think the president, for whatever reason, perhaps surrounded by like-minded people, so he doesn't get the different views, opposing opinions, the full sides of an argument before he makes a decision, is fixated on something called victory in Iraq, this notion of creating democracy in Iraq. I don't think there will ever be democracy in Iraq. I think there's a chance that they'll establish some form of representative government. But you know what? It has to account for the tribal system in Iraq. And we've all but ignored that. And until we figure that out, whatever political system we impose on that culture will not work.
We know the number of soldiers who have died in Iraq, and that number doesn't include contractors. But what about Iraqis? Do you believe the study that was published in the British medical journal Lancet out of Johns Hopkins that estimated somewhere around 655,000 Iraqis had died? That's months ago. A more recent study said somewhere over a million. Does that jive with your experience in Iraq?
There's no question in my mind that there has been too many Iraqis, innocent Iraqis, killed and maimed in their country. There's also no question in my mind that our failure to plan for, resource, and rehearse a transition from warfighting to peace enforcement back in April of 2003 created this situation where our Army and Marine Corps continued to attack in zone and create more enemies than there were insurgents geometrically. That happened. I don't know what the right number is, but I know that the good Iraqi people deserve better than that. We invaded their country. We tore apart their structure, good, bad, or indifferent, and left them in the malaise that they're in now.
I asked you about President Bush. What about Vice President Cheney?
I think President Bush has surrounded himself with like-minded compliant subordinates, and therefore he does not get the opposing opinion, the other side of the coin, so to speak. I recently read the book Team of Rivals on Abraham Lincoln. It impressed me that Abraham Lincoln hired his political opponents, his campaign opponents, to be his cabinet, so that he would ensure that he got all sides of the argument before he took a decision. I think that's a lesson learned from this administration as we go into the future.
What about the Defense Secretary, Gates?
I think he's an incredibly talented, capable person. Time will tell.
And the Congress moving forward with President Bush funding the troops in Iraq?
Wow. I think a couple of things. One is it's absolutely morally right to get our troops in contact with the enemy, anything and everything they need to be successful. I also think this is not about timelines and deadlines, as I said before. This is all about recognizing that we have a fundamentally flawed strategy from the national perspective. We have completely failed to mobilize our country in any way, shape, or form. Look at what's going on with the VA. Today I attended a dedication of a new building at the Rochester Veterans Outreach Center. This is a nonprofit organization. Its purpose is to take care of veterans returning from war. Thank God there's institutions like that all over our country, not just in Rochester, New York, but all over our country to take up the slack. Our VA is not doing a good job by and large. I could go on and on talking about why it's important to mobilize this country and where it hasn't been done.
Would you do anything differently now?
You know, I don't think so. Life is a journey. And you make that journey and you make the best decisions that you can along the way. My decision to speak out in June of 2005 to leave the Army so that I could speak out was the toughest thing I've ever done in my life. But you know what? I haven't looked back, and I can look at myself in the mirror in the morning knowing that I've done the right thing. Somebody had to speak out. If not me, who? How long are we going to continue down this road to nowhere where we're depending on our military almost entirely to accomplish this ill-fated mission in Iraq, all the while ignoring, virtually, the tough diplomatic, political, and economic measures of a successful strategy, and absolutely failing to mobilize this country to accomplish what I believe is a terribly important effort to defeat worldwide Islamic extremism, global terror, whatever you want to call it. But this is the defining issue of our time. I also believe that Iraq and Afghanistan are but the first two chapters in a very long book. Very long book. And guess what? We're off to a very bad start.
Are you going to be writing that book?
I might.
And officers like Aaron Watada, the first officer to say no to deployment in Iraq, people like the Army medic Agustin Aguayo, who went to Iraq, applied for CO status. His investigating officer recommended this, said he was the real deal. He refused to load his weapon for a year that he was in Iraq, went back to Germany where he was based, told he had to go back to Iraq, and that's when he went AWOL. Thousands of soldiers have gone AWOL. What do you think of these soldiers who are resisting?
I think that the right thing for that lieutenant to have done is to certainly express his displeasure within his chain of command. But remember the oath of commissioning that he took when he pinned on his second lieutenant bars. And the truth is he should have deployed with his platoon and led them in combat. And then if at the end of that he still felt the same way that he did, then he should have gotten out to speak out. And if he had done that, he would have had a whole lot more to say. And people would have taken him a lot more seriously.
Florida Army National Guardsman Camilo Mejia went to Iraq, came back, was on leave, and said he couldn't go back. He offered to testify before Congress to talk about the abuse he had seen. But he was court-martialed. He was imprisoned for almost a year. He did go to Iraq, came back. Do you think these men and women should be going to prison?
You know, I don't know the specifics of that case. I have a lot of faith in the military justice system. I also think, as do most Americans, that our Congress, for the better part of 6 years, abrogated their responsibilities to provide the oversight on our executive branch of government, a function that our Constitution depends on. So all of us voters have a big say in this. We need to vote when the elections roll around, and we need to vote for the candidate who knows the issues and the candidate who has the moral courage to do the right thing, to make the right kinds of decisions. But I'll tell you, none of us should be too happy with the way our congressional and executive branch of government have been conducting themselves since 2001.
I wanted to go back to Aaron Wittada. You're saying that he should have gone to Iraq. But if he felt it was wrong, and he felt as a leader, as an officer, he didn't want to take his men and women into battle. I was thinking about the psychiatrist Robert J. Lifton, who's written many books on war, and talking about Iraq being an atrocity-producing situation. Why should Lieutenant Wittada, if he now, upon reflection, before he went to Iraq, realized it was wrong, that WMD wasn't the reason that was originally given, that it didn't actually—they didn't even exist in Iraq. Why should he take young men and women in that direction, lead them into Iraq, when he felt it was wrong?
He followed his conscience, and for that, I respect that. I respect him as a person. I don't agree with what he did. In the military, as I said, there's a fine line between an armed mob and a seasoned, disciplined force. And one of the glues that hold it together is discipline. When an outfit, a company, a battalion, or a brigade receives orders to deploy to Bosnia or Kosovo or Turkey or Iraq or whatever, the soldiers all saddle up and they go. There's no questions. It's, yes, sir, let's go. That's the way the military works. And he stepped out of that. He stepped out of that, and as a result, needs to face the music, whatever it turns out to be.
Do you agree with Congressman Rangel that there should be a draft? Do you think that would mobilize this country if everyone's children were equally, well, possibly going to war?
We have a problem right now. We're facing a long-term threat in a military Army and Marine Corps primarily, but Navy and Air Force as well, that is in serious trouble. In trouble with equipment, in trouble with troop strength. The Army, by some accounts that I've read, needs to be increased by 100,000 soldiers. The Marine Corps, by some accounts that I've read, needs to be increased by 50,000 soldiers to accomplish our national strategy. Where are those soldiers and Marines going to come from in our current recruiting scheme? They don't exist. We have two or three generations of Americans who have never served. This is not a good situation. I think it's time that we debate national service. National service can come in many flavors. The Peace Corps. My daughter served 2 years in Malawi. AmeriCorps. Think of the opportunities with Homeland Security for national service, and of course the military. We need to have that debate, and we need to have it soon.
So do you think there should be a draft?
There needs to be some form of national service to get Americans back into the game, their heads into serving their country. We don't have that right now. Part of the problem is the military is under-resourced, and the current recruiting scheme is insufficient. It won't take us to where we need to go. So we need to debate the draft and form it the way it makes sense for us today to complement things like the Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, and other opportunities that we should be thinking about to support homeland security.
Iran?
A concern. Persian, much bigger than Iraq, a unified country, working on nuclear capability. Let's not take them lightly.
And how do the American people believe the whole issue of Iran getting weapons of mass destruction, given what happened with Iraq?
You know, that's a problem. The people of Iran, by and large, are good people. I lived in Iran as a young boy, old enough to remember well the good people in Iran, a different culture to be sure, but good people. It is strange to me that we have not established much sooner than this a dialogue with the people of Iran.
How do you see that happening?
Well, it takes an administration with some imagination. It's all about getting close with your friends and your enemies. Relationships matter. And the only way to make relationships is to spend time with people, whether you like them or not. You need to understand them so you can make better decisions.
What about dissent and what many feel is a crackdown on dissent in this country, that dissent is not patriotic?
Well, I tell you, anybody that tells me that I've stepped out of line or dissent is not patriotic, I absolutely disagree with that person. I have a moral obligation, a duty, to speak out. Again, if not me, who? How long are we going to trudge down this path of a flawed strategy, a failure to mobilize the country, a war plan that violated basic principles of war, that officers like me for 31 years took on board and understood that to be successful in war, you don't violate principles of war.
Major General John Batiste. He was offered a promotion to become a three-star general, the second highest-ranking military officer in Iraq. Instead, he quit over the war. General Batiste did an ad for VoteVets.org against the Iraq war. 2 days after the ad aired, CBS fired him as a paid news consultant for his advocacy. In response, the group MoveOn.org collected 230,000 signatures on a petition demanding CBS News rehire Batiste. And that does it for this broadcast. If you'd like a copy of the show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkadous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Aaron Matei, Anjali Kamat, Nick Marsilio, and Miguel Noguera, our engineers. Special thanks to Susie Salami. Thanks also to Becca Staley, Rebecca Silver, Kieran Krug-Meadows, Jerome Bourgeois, Laura Shipley, Tori Townsend, Nicole Salazar, and Samantha Chambly. Again, our website is democracynow.org for headlines and news stories. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a good Memorial Day weekend.